Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the attic that smells like a basement in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys who bring forks to medieval times, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today we return to the high seas.
Ye army mateys, prepare to set sail once again.
We continue our build-a-crew called Head of the High Seas. This is we're picking a pirate crew.
Yeah, our build-a-crews are our thought experiments. Some of the more fun times I have because we get to pick from history and real life and pop culture and books and cartoons, and there really are no rules other than it kind of has to fit our loose arbitrary rules that we set up.
We just can't use the same thing from the same property more than once. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So far we've picked our ship, we've picked our captain, we've picked our marine.
Correct.
And now we're moving on to another. So we have the ship, we have the guy to captain it, or girl, in your case.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the heavy, the tough, the person who's going to cause damage. But now we need to have someone who's going to fix human damage.
Yeah, I almost had John Cena for the person that was going to cause damage, but that was a contender. You'll have to go back to see why he was disqualified.
Oh, okay. So now we're choosing our ship's physician. Or known as the naval surgeon.
Oy, the good doctor.
The good doctor.
That's it. Naval surgeon, an actual rank in the fleet.
Yes. How did you find this, Mikey? I've been finding the head of the high seas some of the hardest one because even though Pirates of the Caribbean is huge, they don't seem to make a lot of pirate stuff that has ensemble casts.
True. Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah.
And like as far like notable pirates are usually one name, and then it's hard to find the sub notable pirates.
Exactly.
It's like a captain or nothing really.
Yeah.
You know? Or nefarious and had another title.
Right. I mean, it's kind of fun. We get to dig in and do research and find people that'll fit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, sometimes it gets really silly.
Oh, like I went to Google ship doctor today, and because ship is now slang for relationship and, you know, everybody wants to play doctor, I was like, I'm getting all this anime stuff. That's probably, you know, my cookies and my browser history, but ship doctor didn't get me as close. Naval surgeon was on the ball, so there's your tip if you want to do your own digging.
I'm pretty sure ship doctor is on TLC,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right after Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yep. Ship doctor, we'll fix your relationship.
Yes. Ship doctor, the next ship doctor, Kelsey tells the doctor how she feels about Nathan's actions at the resort.
Hosted by Dr. Sheila E. Love. Dr. Love. No, so yeah, ship doctor didn't get me anywhere, but naval surgeon did.
All right, naval surgeon. So Mikey has flipped a coin, a piece of eight.
All pieces of eight.
Yes.
And seven of them come up skulls, and the last one came up parrot, so we'll just assume that means I go first.
Yes.
Are we sure that's what it came up with?
Don't question it. That's against pirate code.
Parlay?
Oh, we can parlay after the episode, though. Once I already make my picks. But for my third pick, this was in heavy consideration.
Is it silly?
It is silly. Because you asked me, how hard did I find this one? A couple of these have been difficult. It really is hit or miss. Doctor was a little bit easier, one, because I had a default in mind that I'll get to in a minute.
Ooh.
But it also is like it's a fun role in media, so it does come up a lot. But this one I had to put down as my silly because I came across the reasoning of it, and I was like, I totally forgot about that. But my third pick for Ship Doctor will be, the people of Lilliput call him the Man Mountain. It is.
Gulliver?
Lemuel Gulliver.
Oh.
From Gulliver's Travels, or its alternate title, Travels into Several Remote Nations of the World in Four Parts by Lemuel Gulliver, first a surgeon and then a captain of several ships.
Oh, I had no idea Gulliver was a surgeon.
That's it. It's in the longer title for it. You know, the old book by Jonathan Swift. We always just call it Gulliver's Travels, but it's right there in the title. He's a surgeon.
I forgot how, like, those old books sometimes have those big, giant, crazy long titles.
Overly explanatory reasons and titles.
That's it. So this is one of them, and in it, it says he's a surgeon. I was like, really? And he has a whole history. Like, He did go to college and study medicine, but he's my third pick because he doesn't really do surgeon stuff in the story. Yeah. He's got the adventuring qualities. Mm-hmm. He sets sail, although all four parts of the story are beset, like it's, nature has it out for him. The first time he's shipwrecked, that's part one. Part two is storms and lack of water. Part three is actually pirates, so he does have crossings with pirates. And then part four, he lives in a tiny box, and a giant bird picks up the box and deposits it into part four. So he has the weirdest journeys. He could handle pirate life, I'm pretty sure.
He has travels.
He has traveled. He's seen big people. He's seen little people.
How many adaptations of Gulliver's Travels have there been? Like, who do we have as Gulliver choices?
Jack Black is one.
Jack Black was a Gulliver? Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That was early Jack Black. That was young Jack Black.
Yeah. Yeah. Start of childhood movie Jack Black.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Post Kung Fu Panda, though. But yeah, like, when I think of Gulliver's Travels, I really think of, like, the illustrations in the books. And like a cartoon, maybe?
Because
I can't think of any, other than Jack Black, I can't think of any famous faces that played him.
Yeah, I think of, there is, I think we may have mentioned these on the pod before.
What's that?
The Illustrated Classics series.
Exactly.
Of books. They were graphic novels. And I remember the Gulliver's Travels one being one that I read. It sticks in my brain.
Yeah, because it's the picture. He's tied down on the beach, you know, and he's got all the ropes over him, and then he's got all the little people climbing all over him. The Lilliputians.
Lilliputians.
Sorry, but we harp on silly names for pirates, and Gulliver's four parts have the silliest titles. So, part one, A Voyage to Lilliput. Easy. Part two, A Voyage to Brobdignag, which is the big people. And then part three, with the pirates, is such a left turn. It's then A Voyage to Laputa, Balbnibari, Lugnag, Glubdrubdrib, and Japan. Part three is the first time we get an actual country, and it's like fourth listed. It's like blah, 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 Japan.
After a bunch of Susian names.
Yeah, yeah. But Gulliver's fun. He's the perfect narrator. He's the perfect protagonist because he really has no emotional output. He just reacts to everything he sees and he retells it with facts because it's an old-timey story. But it is kind of funny because for Gulliver's Travels, for being all silly, it is a commentary on European monarchy and governments and the old like sci-fi Douglas Adams. There's a lot of commentary buried in there, which is essentially a children's story, you know. And Gulliver is relatively a good guy. It doesn't end up well for him, so I won't spoil it, the hundreds and hundreds of year old book. But he does become kind of a jerk in his later age. So not only did he never actually prove his surgeon skills, he's kind of a old grumpy guy. So I went with somebody a little bit cooler for two and one. But Gulliver was a doctor. I had no idea.
Yeah, me neither.
There are at least 10 different iterations of Gulliver's Travels.
Any faces or names we might know?
Well, the 2010 Jack Black.
There we go.
See, there was the Ted Danson miniseries in 1996.
Ted Danson Gulliver. I do think I remember that.
They just did the first two, Lilliput and Brobdignagian.
Okay.
There was a 1939 Gulliver's Travels.
That's probably a lot of fun.
And it was a 1977 Gulliver's Travels. Richard Harris and Catherine Schell.
Okay. Don't know those names.
It's also a 2010. Yep. TV's animated thing in 1996. A TV movie in 79.
So we've had a bunch of them, but we haven't had the standout like.
Yeah, no one's hit the ball out of the park with Gulliver.
That's it. Maybe it's right for the picking.
I'm learning for the first time that it was Jack Black at one point.
That was a silly one. That was just a let's make a fun kids movie.
Yeah.
But I think if they did like the four-parter, like, hey, let's give this the commentary that it has, that'd be fun. Nathan Fillion all day long. No, I'm serious. He's Gulliver all day. Like, he has that. A little bit dumb, you know, because he's got to be like, what are these weird people around? What are these yahoos? Where we get the word yahoo from is Gulliver's Travel.
Oh, my. You call him, what? Yahoo comes from Gulliver's Travels?
To refer to a crazy person.
Wow.
Those bunch of yahoo? Yeah, those bunch of yahoos. Yeah, he encounters the yahoos, and they are sort of crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about that.
Oh, the Jack Black one wasn't old-timey. That's the problem. That's why it didn't hit.
No, it had songs and musical breaks and stuff.
Yeah. But it's set in modern times.
That's it.
Gulliver's Travel should be old-timey.
Yeah, four movies, Dune style. Let's go hard, Gulliver's Travels. Yeah. I want to see it.
You want each section as its own movie.
No, but like imagine if you, not like real, not like Nolan, like, oh, let's get gritty with it. But I'm saying like if you made it dramatic, like epic, and he encounters giants and tiny little people, you could have a lot of fun with that. Mm-hmm. Like you could take it as, you could take it as seriously as Lord of the Rings if you wanted.
You could.
How does chapter four, the fourth part, he's talking with horses. It's going to look like Mr. Ed.
It will. The Hunyuns, as they're called? Yes.
The Winnums.
It's spelled like it looks. If you say it like it's spelled, it sounds like
it's pronounced Winnums. Excuse me. Don't make me point to my English degree on the wall.
I know. But see, like a legit, like encountering the horse tribe, like, but in like Witcher vibes, that could be fun. Mm. You get what I'm saying? Not necessarily grimdark, but like give it some gravitas.
Yeah.
Because they did boar person in Witcher, and that was like, oh, that's weird. I'm just Hinge. The Gulliver's Travel seems ripe for the picking.
Yeah.
But not for me. I have better doctors to put on my ship.
Yes.
Oh, look, the Jack Black one has like little tiny robots in it, and they're fighting. Look at that.
Those are the scientific people from part three.
Why have I never seen this movie?
Because it was terrible?
I would say this is actually your kid blackout as far as timing goes.
Could be. Could be 2010. Oh, it's a Christmas movie, too. Or rather, it came out at Christmas.
Yeah, there's Jason Segel. We're watching the trailer right now. We're watching
the trailer right now.
It's a good time.
All right.
See, I contribute.
My third pick is very goofy. And when I thought Ship's Doctor, this was the first thing that popped into my head.
There you go.
For no other reason than it's the first Ship's Doctor I encountered. This is from a TV show that my mom watched. I don't think my dad was involved.
I love it.
And I don't really think I cared about it. I just think it was on the shiny color box.
You enjoy, you sort of just absorbed it through osmosis being in the same proximity.
I think so.
While it was being viewed.
And I don't think this is anything that I ever went back and checked out, except for maybe sometimes when my mom was watching the reruns of it on cable, so I might have seen it when I was older, too.
Okay.
And it's the one, the only, Dr. Adam Bricker from the original Love Boat.
The Love Boat.
Doc on the Love Boat.
That's
when
it.
I think of a boat doctor, I think of that guy with the with the creepy 70s, 80s brown tinted glasses.
Yes.
The hair that needs to be trimmed. Wearing those dumb white shorts with the knee high socks.
Hey, man, they're just sensible. They're comfortable.
Being very creepy and basically hashtag me tooing everyone all over the boat.
As was the time on the Love Boat.
Yes.
I mean, you're getting on something called the Love Boat.
Because I literally looked it up and was watching, like, I was like, okay, let me, I remember this existing. Let me look up this guy. Well, I turned into walk in there for a second.
There you go.
And it was just, and there was like, I guess TV Land shows the Love Boat. So they had like this kind of clipped up, like, best moments of Doc from the Love Boat.
Yeah, run that highlight reel.
So I watched the highlight reel, and he was just being so creepy. And it was stuff like, oh, hey, how about we go play doctor? You know, it was creepy 70s lounge lizard.
Yeah.
Just, ugh. I mean, he was just a total skirt chaser on the high seas. Apparently, I guess his backstory is he'd been married and divorced 6 times.
That's a lot.
So I don't know if that in the 70s, if that was thought to be funny or awesome, or I don't know.
It is a real big tell about our love doctor. It's like, yeah. Oh, 6 times? Okay.
Yeah, but he definitely was like the love doctor. But it seemed like everyone on that show was just out. From the one clip I saw, I thought the whole point, I was totally wrong in my memory. I thought the Love Boat was like basically this dramedy where it was a couple of, it had guest stars of the week.
Yep.
And two of them would meet and they'd fall in love and it'd be romantic.
Love Boat.
But apparently it was very 70s hookup culture. Everyone on the boat, even the people who worked on the boat, were like involved with during
doing
the,
it.
Yeah, you, during the cruise, you're on the cruise. You know what stays on the love boat, or what goes on the love boat stays on the love boat. It was very.
It's international waters. There are no rules.
Have you revisited?
Just
part of your research?
Yes.
Episodes did you watch?
I just watched the supercut of the doc, and that was enough. That was enough to know what it was all about.
Here's my question, though. Like, I'm familiar with the character. That vibe is absolutely the vibe from that show. But like we're saying, it is a 70s, like, entertainment, middle of the day. No, it wasn't middle of the day.
It was almost like prime time.
Yeah, it was prime time watching. So it had to be scandalous. I mean, it was the Melrose Place of its time.
It was.
So, but did he, in this highlight reel, does he actually do any doctoring of any sort? Or is it more like, let me check out this ankle? Oh, dainty little thing.
The second one.
Okay.
It's like, remember that? I forget who the actress was. I remember because I used to see these game shows. You come across the same celebrities that were on the Love Boat with the celebrities that were on game shows that I watched and Scott probably watched in the 80s when we were sick. And there was some, like, the Sofia Vergara of the time, the Coochie Coochie, the lady who's Coochie Coochie.
Yeah, she had, she'd do the Chiquita Banana Lady.
Yeah, and she had a guitar, and she'd be like, oh, Coochie Coochie. The
Zsa Zsa Gabor? No. No, it's not Chaka Khan.
Zsa Zsa Gabor for sure was on Love Boat a gabillion times.
Yeah, yeah.
Both the Gabor sisters, those are the Kardashians of the 70s. But she was...
Charo, thank you. Charo is who we're talking about.
So Charo is, she's in it, and she's like, oh, doctor, my tummy is having problems. And he's like, well, it sounds like you need some doctoring, you know. It's like,
probably get that body moving with some dancing, and we'll heal you right up.
It was just creepo. Like, I am not someone who's sensitive to that stuff, really, but just having not seen it in so long, it was so creepo. And then him and the captain at one point, there was some, like, the new passengers, the, like, new meat coming on board the ship.
Yeah.
And they were like, they were kind of like, oh, hey, look at this one over there. Oh, hey, no, she's mine. No, she's mine. It's like, oh, may the best man win.
MASH walked so Love Boat could run, so that Baywatch could sprint run marathons.
Right. It was so Leisure Suit Larry.
Well, amazing.
Anyway, he's only on the list because for my little brain, it was just impressioned into it. Because my mom was watching Love Boat, and I was just a kid running around the house. And I'm like, ship's doctor, that guy from Love Boat.
You don't have any recall of your mom being like, oh, that doctor. And
I don't know. She watched. It was a popular show. It was huge. It was hugely popular. And and my mother watched what was popular. She was pretty much standard American TV watcher. She was not going outside the box at all with her TV watching.
You couldn't. You only had 6 channels and everything was uphill. It was a different time.
And that's true. Anyway,
yeah. But I do like that as a consideration.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, like, I know the dumb song, the theme song. Like, why would I know the theme song to a show like I didn't actively watch? It's just because it was on and I was a kid. Because
it was a banger. That's why.
Love Boom. So loungy and stuff.
It lets you know the vibe you're getting into, which is...
Yeah, I knew way too much about things that I don't want to because there's the one TV in the house.
Yeah.
So I don't want to know all about Murder, She Wrote, but I do.
Oh, yeah, Knots Landing.
Yeah.
I know a whole lot about Knots Landing. Yeah,
and you don't want to?
I don't want to.
Yeah, see? Love Boat was that for me.
Yeah, but it can be a win sometimes. I know a whole bunch about ER, which makes me kind of a doctor.
Yeah.
But that's because of my mom.
Okay, well, your mom was watching.
Actually, no, it doesn't.
But we are both fans, more so. I mean, we love it, but both of, I think maybe all three of us are Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman fans, sort of against our will.
Oh, yeah. No.
At least at the start.
Not me.
No, yeah, I know.
I watched it on purpose.
Oh, fair enough. But yeah, that is true. I was trying to give you the out. No,
I'll admit it. I'll admit it.
But that is a fun third pick and easy to disqualify.
Yeah. My gosh. Now I kind of want to watch it now to see how bad it is. It's almost MST3K that
I mean, often sometimes when you go back and rewatch something, it's such a letdown.
Yeah.
Don't go back and rewatch them.
Well, I really didn't like watch them on purpose in the first place. But maybe if I could find like a guest star who, because they had guest stars all the time, like who I actually know who they are,
mm-hmm.
see what was happening there.
There you go. Yeah. Give you a little bit of a buy into it.
Yeah.
Or you could do the nerdy thing and just make a supercut, kind of like the supercut of Big Bang Theory where they take out like the laugh track. You could take out all the smarm from the Love Boat and you get like 8-minute episodes. It's like, thanks for letting us board your ship. All right, here, we're at the island. Okay, yay, thanks, bye. I don't know.
Yeah, it was creepy. Like that gopher dude who like, yeah. I forget what his job is. He had the clipboard, which was telling people where their rooms were. And every time, like, he'd be like, hello, ladies. Oh, well, maybe you should be in my room. Like, seriously. I'm like, are you kidding me?
So scandalous.
Oh, my God.
Standards were different back then.
Oh, but that is a fun third pick. But that means we are on to second picks. This one was my default that I mentioned earlier. When you were talking, that was your Love Boat was your default.
Yeah.
Or your first thought. My first thought was Paul Bettany, because I have a man crush on Paul Bettany.
Okay.
And Paul Bettany played Stephen Maturin from the Aubrey and Maturin Master and Commander Patrick O'Brien series.
Ah, okay.
The movie that he played him in came out in 2003, so it's another ancient movie. It had Russell Crowe in it.
Yeah.
And I bring it up. I've mentioned it. I hope I've mentioned it before on the podcast, but I bring it up again because one issue is... that movie should be spoken about in the same hallowed tones that Gladiator gets spoken about.
Yeah.
And I don't think that happens. So I'm sort of doing my part in the universe to give more shout out to Master and Commander. And also maybe just, we only got one of them and there's like 13 books. So
I know. I don't know why people don't like boats.
It's Waterworld. It's the Waterworld curse.
Is it the Waterworld curse? Maybe.
The world got burned real hard by that one movie, and now everybody said, no more sailing.
Yeah.
It's got epic scenery, and the movie is amazing. But one of the things that sells it, especially for me as an avid Paul Bettany fan, is he brings a real cool persona to this character.
Mm-hmm.
The appeal to Stephen Maturin is... he is the best friends with the captain. It's really, he's the second name in the series because he's just of a main character as Captain Jack Aubrey is. Mm-hmm. Captain Jack Aubrey is your tropish captain. Like, we must go get them. Let's set sail. Whatever adventure may come. And Maturin is sort of his brought there against his will, voice of reason, like almost hesitant and gun-shy best friend who's like, are you sure about this? You know, like maybe, you know, reconsider or think about this. Like, why are you jumping off the boat? You know, take a second and think. He's that tropey right-hand man guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he happens to be a naturalist, kind of like a Charles Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
He happens to be an excellent surgeon. He studied at Trinity College in Ireland because he's had a half-Irish boy.
Aye.
And then he also becomes a spy. Later in the books.
Ooh.
So that shows that he levels up in skill, and that's his crew member 101 that you kind of want to go for. People mm-hmm. that can multi-class, you know?
Well, he's like that until he gets to New Zealand. And then he's a giddy little schoolboy collecting all kinds of, you know, flora, fauna, snakes, and lizards, and bugs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of annoying. He got real too into that.
He has the Darwin about him. When he's a man of learning.
When does he get the stone embedded into his head?
That comes in the sequel. They do a time jump, I think, after the 8th book.
Mm-hmm.
I forget where Galactus comes in, but it's somewhere around there.
He comes right after the Silver Surfer.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Silver Surfer, Aubrey. Yeah, they have that weird conversation. He's like, why is there a surfer out here? It hasn't been in... oh, anyway, I love that bit. No, but that's more reason to love Paul Bettany. Paul Bettany was Vision. Paul Bettany was Chaucer in A Knight's Tale.
Mm, yes.
I take every opportunity to say his name when I can because he is so rad.
Yeah, yeah. No, that his turn in A Knight's Tale is kind of what makes that whole...
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it is the loyal doctor. Like when the good ship doctor, when you hear those references and those tropes, he is living up to that trope. Mm-hmm. He is the man that is cool and calm when it comes to an actual disaster. Like if a person is wounded and needs help, nothing can faze him and he will do the job, you know? But put him on an island where there's Galapagos stuff and turtles and he's like, ooh, neat. I've never seen any of this. I must draw it. And then he gets real sad when he doesn't get to draw. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're best friends and they have their tete-a-tetes, and it's a really great relationship that makes it. I mean, that's what the books are about, is their relationship. Mm-hmm. And you just have to get cool sailing after the fact. Oh, I do like this because not only is he's an awesome character who gets a development arc over double-digit books, he's fluent in like 6 languages. He speaks Portuguese, he speaks Spanish, he speaks Catalonian because his mother, he's half Catalonian, half Irish, which makes him exotic, but he's still pale and short and stocky and blue-eyed and mm-hmm. looking like the Irish child, which is amazing. So not as cool looking as Paul Bettany in the actual books. But for being fluent in all these languages and being the well-educated doctor, the author made him real dumb on purpose when it comes to ship stuff so he could be the reader's in to learning about the ships.
Ah.
So, like, it is a fun sort of, it ends up being a fun character trope because, like, you're a real smart man. Like, you know how to help people, but you don't know what, like, port is.
Yeah.
It's like, come on now. But it's like, oh, no, I had to do that. That was the way for me to explain to the audience what ship stuff was. And it's like,
I kind of like that.
It's so fun, but it is a little quirk about him. It's like, this smart man doesn't know a mast? Come on now.
Yeah. Well, it's got other things to concentrate on.
Like finding the scrap of shirt in the bullet wound. Way more important.
See? He loves a puzzle. He loves figuring it out, and he will.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was my default. That was going to be my number one pick.
Oh.
Until research and notes and a revelation that will blow your mind.
Okay.
For my number one pick.
Ooh.
Stay tuned about 10 minutes from now.
Okay.
Yeah, so no pressure, Kevin. Yeah.
Now, my number one and number two pick are both real pirate doctors.
Love it.
And it was almost hard to decide, but then it wasn't in the end. So we'll get there. But my second pick, easily could be a first pick, is a fellow named Thomas Dover, often called as a nickname Dr. Quicksilver.
Yeah, that's a cool nickname.
It is a cool nickname. So this guy lived in the late 16, early 1700s. He was a doctor who had a bachelor's degree in medicine from Cambridge, got a license from the Royal College of Physicians, so he was a bona fide for real doctor, and he had a practice in Bristol, England for quite a long time. Because what's interesting about Thomas Dover was in 1708, at the age of 48 years old,
what? Okay.
He decided to go on an expedition with a privateer as the ship's doctor.
Oh, wow.
The naval surgeon. And he's notable. One of the reasons why people know about him is because the Wood Rogers expedition was the one in 1709 found a man clothed in goat skins who looked wilder than the first owners of them, quote unquote.
Ooh.
This man was named Alexander Selkirk, and he had been marooned on an island for 4 years.
Holy crap.
Had gone total, like, native.
Rogue, yeah.
And he is the inspiration for the real-life Robinson Crusoe.
Amazing.
Yeah. So Dover was on that expedition that found that guy.
That's crazy.
It is, right?
And he was covered in goat skins?
Yeah.
I guess because goats were on the island.
I guess so, yeah.
He only learned, he got reduced to one word, and that was just Bob. Mm-hmm. Bob. That's crazy. Robinson Crusoe.
This Alexander Sosky joined them on the rest of the expedition, the privateering expedition of Woods Rogers, a notable privateer of the time. They seized a Spanish vessel, and as we've talked about before, when they seize a vessel, they need to split the crew up and mm-hmm. pick a captain for that vessel. They made Dover the captain of the vessel because he's the doctor, but he didn't know anything about sailing. They're like, oh, we'll take care of you. You're smart enough.
You'll figure it out.
He had no navigational skills or anything, but hey, you're a doctor. You're smart. You're learned. You're old, too. I mean, he's 48, 49 at this point, and so you probably had that.
That's Captain Ahab stuff, though. Yeah. Like, late career, like, okay, this is the change in my life. It's like, okay, boss.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like also interesting that he did know, like maybe I was giving Maturin and my boy Paul Bettany a hard time for not knowing ship stuff. But I mean, maybe that was just accurate to like the doctors of the time. They really only knew one thing.
Yeah, doctoring. In 1709, he was involved in the sacking of Guayaquil in Ecuador. I guess that's probably a native town.
Yep.
At the time of the attack, oh, actually, it wasn't a native town. It was a Spanish town. Because at the time of the attack, there was plague in the town. The plague.
Whoops.
And they had a whole bunch of dead bodies stacked in the churches. And the pirates couldn't help but loot the church.
Oh,
that's
no.
where all the valuable stuff is.
Yep.
So then they all got plague.
And they became the plague ship.
Yeah. And 48 hours later, several ships of 180 men came down with the plague. So he ordered the rest of the surgeons. He's like, I know what to do. Bleed them. Because apparently bleeding people was how you fix them.
Out with the bad blood, I guess.
I guess. But apparently this worked because he only lost 7 or 8 men out of the 180, which he attributed to the strong liquors which their messmates procured for them.
Of course.
And the bleeding of...
So is that like actual like leeches bleeding is what I'm
guessing? No. They would like lance your vein and it would just bleed.
Let it drain. Okay.
They'd let it drain out.
Because I know that like it also refers to like the practice of leeches, which is actually like mm-hmm. super effective. But
yes.
That's crazy.
Yes.
And it worked though.
I guess so. That's what he claims. I only lost 7 or 8 out of 180 who got the plague.
Confirmed.
Oh.
Draining of blood and fluids from buboes, the swellings that arose among many plague victims.
Oh, okay.
He was the guy that figured it out.
There you go. Wow, well, that was probably figured. This is much later.
Oh, that's the mask was the big nose thing.
Yeah,
the plague mask.
Plague dash.
After sailing around the world with Roger's expedition, he returned to England in 1711, and then he retired from being a pirate. So
you kind of have to after that be like, I saved people from the plague. I'm done. No.
So he was basically a pirate for 3 years and earned wages of £422 and £100 in storm money. I don't know what that is. £24 of plunder money and booty worth £2,755.
I've seen pictures of him. Tell me something I don't know.
Yeah. after retirement, he became a respected physician in London and became known for inventing a Dover's powder, which was a medicine that contained ipecac, opium, potassium sulfate, and licorice.
Isn't ipecac what make you projectile vomit?
Yes. It contained ipecac, opium, potassium sulfate, and licorice, and was just the cure for patients who suffer from a cold, a cough, insomnia, rheumatism, pleurism, or dysentery.
I like that this guy's solution, because the solution to the plague was bleeding, which is basically just take all their blood out. And this has ipecac and opium and all things to just make your body expel.
Yes.
Like, oh, just get the bad stuff out. Uh-huh. Yeah, here's a bunch of stuff that gets the bad stuff out. I like that guy's sort of modus operandi.
But here's the funny thing. Dover's powder was still in use at the beginning of the 20th century.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned before he had the nickname Dr. Quicksilver. That's because his main prescription was large doses of mercury for whatever ailed you.
That's what I'm telling you. Yeah, just blast everything that's bad in your body out of you.
And he killed so many people. just like, you know what's going to help you? Tons of mercury. Tons.
You go back to that guy's records logbook, and it just says allergic to mercury. to mercury. No.
I don't know.
It's never him.
So this guy lived until 82 years old.
That's crazy. Started at 48.
1742. But before his death, he wrote The Ancient Physician's Legacy to His Country, a successful book which was printed over 7 times.
That's crazy.
Yes, 7 editions.
7 editions, that's a long run.
Yeah. So, interesting character, seemed to be successful, but I think he just is too...
He has one solution.
Yeah, one solution. It's like, I've been shot. Well, give me my syringe full of mercury.
Here's some Pepto-Bismol and some X-Lax. I've just put them in the same glass. Just have fun.
Yeah.
Have some fun with it.
Anyway, Dr. Quicksilver, Dover's powder, ipecac, opium.
All the things that'll cure what ails you.
Potassium sulfate and licorice. Licorice is the funny thing, too. I bet you that was for flavor. I bet you it was to kill
yeah,
whatever flavors those other things had in there.
To blast out whatever bad things are in your taste buds as well. I mean, you might as well. Now, but, like, for as far as an actual ship's doctor, though, I mean, he did face the plague and win. So
yeah, that's true.
That is sort of a big feather in his cap.
But 3 years, a bunch of plunder.
And he cashed out.
Invested it into his powder business, I guess. I mean, it must have had some effect because it lasted so long, but it's probably the opium, right?
Yep.
It's that classic... that's a classic snake oil stuff that's just whiskey, basically. And it's like, oh, I feel better now. It's like, yeah, because you're drunk.
Dr. Dover's magic powder.
Yeah. My back doesn't hurt anymore. It's because you're high on opium.
I can't feel my insides. It's because they're outside.
Anyway.
That's hardcore, man. And starting at 48. I could almost do that in a few years and just go live the naval surgeon life.
I'm Dr. Tom Dover.
You got ghosts in your blood.
Yeah, right.
You should do some Dover's powder about it.
And we'll talk about more about bleeding after we heard about Mikey's number one pick.
Because
it seemed to be the cure of the era.
Well, and that's what's funny. And like, there's a lot of commonalities. Obviously, a lot of this is happening around the same time. My first pick is also a real life person because I was astounded. For being a real life person, he is kind of a superhero in pirate times.
Wow.
But he is a man named James Lind, L-I-N-D. And the quick bullet point is that he cured scurvy.
Oh, really? Is he related to Paul Lind?
I don't know.
Or is Paul Lind related to him?
Maybe. it is the other way around.
Oh, my.
James Lind essentially was the one that discovered that citrus was the thing missing and that would cure scurvy.
That's what made them limeys.
And what killed off a whole bunch of pirates. So if you want a doctor that knows how to save a whole bunch of pirates, maybe call the guy that, hey, saw scurvy and said, oh, I know how to fix this. Here,
give
eat some
orange.
Yeah, give him some oranges and limes.
You scurvy old dog, you.
Yes, salty bastard.
I'm not scurvy no more. I've got James Lind on my side.
It's true. But it didn't stop there. But the main thing was he was the one that noticed that scurvy was the problem and figured out what the fix was.
Tell me more, Mikey.
And he did this by essentially doing the first clinical trial.
What?
With a control group.
Whoa!
Yeah, the first one to ever sort of do an experimentation to figure out what medicine to work is this guy.
Meanwhile, Dover's over there going like, just put some mercury in him.
Just put stuff in until stuff comes out.
Just put stuff into stuff.
That's it. Quicker, Quicksilver. But here's the details of the experiment he did leading up to discovering that citrus was the key for scurvy. He actually thought that scurvy was due to putrefaction of the body that could be helped by acids. So he included an acidic dietary supplement in the experiment. This began after 2 months at sea when the ship was afflicted with scurvy. He divided 12 scorbutic sailors into 6 groups of 2.
Scorbutic?
Yeah, that's having scurvy.
Oh, apparently. Wow. Look at you, Mr. Latin doctor man.
Every day is a school day. They all received the same diet, but in addition, group 1 was given a quart of cider. Group 2 was given 25 drops of elixir of vitriol, which was essentially a sulfuric acid.
Anger.
Yeah. Group 3 was given 6 spoonfuls of vinegar. Group 4 was given a half a pint of seawater. Group 5 was given 2 oranges and a lemon. And the last group was given a spicy paste plus a drink of barley water. Like, he really was just like, we got to figure this out. You take
throw
this.
Some stuff against the wall, see what sticks.
But in doing so, he essentially set up the first, like, control group.
Spicy paste.
The first clinical trial.
That's it.
There's so much stuff you said that I want to know. What's spicy paste? That sounds tasty.
It was a spicy paste and the drink was barley water.
Oh.
Doesn't even define the paste.
I know.
Yeah. I love the 25 drops of sulfuric acid. Yeah, that should help.
Nice.
It's a problem with acids. But it worked because the guys he gave the 2 oranges and a lemon to were the only one that showed improvement. In fact, they were almost essentially returned fit for duty after 2 weeks, and everybody else was essentially just still the same. So he was like, oh, this
or is... Or worse.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably worse, depending on which of the groups you were in.
But did they try Quicksilver? I didn't hear that on the list.
Have you tried Ipecac and opium? Yeah. I hear that's going around these days.
Says Thomas Dover. You've left things out.
You must get those things out. Again. That's the problem.
Bend over. I thought your name was... Oh.
That's his son, Benjamin Newell.
That's true.
Low-hanging fruit.
We're having fun, though.
Low-hanging citrus fruit.
That's it. That cures scurvy, thanks to James Lind. He also figured out like that hygiene was necessary, like, and a good thing.
Well, really?
Yeah.
No way.
But like, this was also still around the time when it was kind of novel.
Yeah,
like,
no, I know.
Oh yeah, doctors, if you wash your hands, you don't kill your patients. Go figure. So he was part of that, but it was actually more towards later work in his hospitals. But he just thought about it discovered it in hospitals and then took his work onto ships and then made it better and ended up doing a lot in the research for typhus. So. Cured scurvy, cured typhus, was able to figure out how to get fresh water from seawater.
Really?
He helped.
It seemed like they have trouble with that now.
But he helped essentially develop a steam engine that would distill it and remove the salt from it. Mm. He's not the inventor of it, but he's part of the names that come up when you start looking at the historical context of that and how ships were able to get fresh water again. But dude is a trip. His personality is widely regarded as having an eccentric personality and considered to be reckless with spending money as captured by some of his friends. He says, Dr. Lind, you spend a whole seas of gold. And he had no objection.
I wonder, it sounds like he might have been on the spectrum.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like having that like supreme focus.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Knowing how to solve that puzzle like just by glancing at it.
Yeah.
Fanny Burney is a name that in his circle cast doubt whether he obtained much of a private medical practice because he eventually did quit sailing, didn't die. He actually retired from sailing and then opened up a practice after writing PhDs and theses on, here's what I learned about scurvy and typhus. But his friend Fanny was unsure that he would keep it because his taste for tricks, conundrums, and queer things make people fearful of his trying experiments on their constitution. And think of him a better conjurer than a physician.
Oh, man.
Though I don't know why the same man should not be both. So he's almost magical in his physician-itude.
That's just, oh my gosh.
So he was,
You go over his house and he's like, I've made a new concoction. I'd like you to try it. I believe it will improve your vigors and make it so that you'll be able to stay up an extra 4 hours every night.
Scotty pulled up a picture. The listeners should do the same because he really does have like the Oscar Wilde, Dorian Gray like attitude about him. But yeah, like, so he was the type of dude who's like, if you came to him and be like, doctor, I have a headache, he'd be like, all right, I'll give you some Advil. Or we could try this. I've been working on it. We're going to put some squirrels on your head. And it might work, though, because his thinking was true. So yeah, James Lind. I did not know about this guy much before the podcast. I had heard his name and a little bit of trivia, but I didn't realize that all these little pieces connected to the same dude. And he's part of the same British, like he's the RSF, whatever you call it, the royal member of the service, whatever the title you get to show such good service to your country.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He has all of those, but he went into like the British services and went to the actual like Royal Navy and was a Royal Navy surgeon. So did all the actual like proper legwork up to it. But here's the mind blowing trivia that sealed in James Lind. James Lind taught at Eton College.
Okay. Yeah. That's where the royals go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like all the old universities.
And yeah.
Eton's one of the big ones. Around 1809, he tutored Percy Shelley, husband of Mary Shelley.
Ah.
Percy alluded to Lind in two poems from 1817. The old man who rescues Leon in the Revolt of Islam and Prince of Athenais, where he appears as the wild old teacher Magus Zonoris. So Lind and Mary Shelley of Frankenstein's fame, her husband, were like buddies and mentor and mentee.
Oh.
So Percy was fascinated. This is her husband was fascinated with Lind's experiments and demonstrations of galvanism, using electricity to animate the muscles of dead frogs, causing them to jump or causing the jerking of reptile muscles.
Wait, Paul Lind was that guy?
He was doing this.
Yeah.
And he was telling Percy about it.
Right. I know about the story, but I didn't know that was Paul Lind. Tell the story. Go.
Percy was so like enthralled with these experiments that he recounted them to his young 19-year-old wife who had nightmares about it. And that 19-year-old wife nightmares were putting into novel form and became Frankenstein.
Yes.
So this dude that cured scurvy and helped fix typhus also inspired Frankenstein.
Oh.
They do say that the doctor character it's actually, you know, it's Frankenstein's monster, Frankenstein's the doctor. But yeah. There are doctor characters in the novel that they say are sort of friendly references to James Lind.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, super nerdy pirate. He inspired Frankenstein, wow. Which means he was mad scientist doctor. Yeah, yeah, he was yeah. like, we can take electricity. Look what it does to these frogs. Just making them jump.
Isn't it amazing?
Oh, it's wonderful. So I figure he can hang with a cast of characters, the ramshackle crew sure. that I'm putting together. But dude has a track record. So
that's yeah. really cool. Yeah, the other countries thought the whole lime thing was crazy.
Yep.
They didn't even realize what was going on.
Yeah,
it was almost like a national secret with the British Navy for a while. They used to call them limeys because the weirdos have all the limes on their ships. What the heck's going on?
That's it. And there, I have the battle in here somewhere, but there is a famous battle where scurvy wiped out like 90% of actual like sailors and mm-hmm. people fighting just because they were sick. And so like once they were like, hey, just put limes in people's rations, it really was like a month turnaround. It was like, oh, we have sailors again. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. So pretty rad. James Lind is coming on my ship.
That's a really good pick.
I'm pretty sure that means I have to be experimented on, you know, on a weekly basis just for research. But I think I'm okay with that.
All right. Great number one pick.
You're supposed to say, yar right.
Yar right.
What's a pirate's favorite letter?
R.
Most people think it's R, but is true love be the C? Continue.
It's driving me nuts. So my number one choice is a fellow named Lionel Wafer. Lionel Wafer is a Scots-Irish man.
Ooh, I love it.
Who went to sea in 1677, golden age of piracy. And he went to sea as a surgeon's mate. So that's basically the assistant to the ship surgeon aboard a ship called the Great And, bound for Java.
The Coffee Isles?
Yeah. Eventually, he made his way to Port Royal in Jamaica.
Yeah, yeah.
The pirate haven. And his brother worked for the governor, Sir Thomas Modiford. And there, Wafer opened his own practice, a doctor's practice.
Oh, hell yeah.
That only lasted 4 months because, once again, he was on the sea aboard a privateer because Port Royal's a hotbed of privateers.
All the ships coming in
exactly.
and out.
Exactly. And someone needed a ship surgeon. He's like, I've done that before.
Now, is this do we know if this is a Dover situation and he felt called to it? Or was he like, hey, doctor, we need you. You got to fix a crew. Come with us.
Unknown.
Okay.
Maybe you can find out because he wrote a book. This is why we know so much about him.
I'm going to hope for the latter, but continue.
He joined John Coxon, the pirate captain. They sacked Portobello. And then he went on to try and sack a place called Arica. And it was a disaster. Coxon and his men were overtaken by the Spanish,
mm-hmm,
were beaten.
Of course.
But Lionel Wafer survived because he was back with the boats preparing salves and plasters for the people who would be wounded, and hardly anyone showed back up. And he's like, oh no. Like, basically, you know, can you see he's sitting there mixing up the salves and plasters, and guys come like run, ah, we gotta go.
Start the ship.
Yeah, right. So with the Spanish hot on their tails, there was only 41 of them left. John Cook was the man they put in charge.
Oh, Cook is, yeah, he's an OG pirate.
Yeah, and they had to get out of there, and the only way they could get out of there were on a bunch of canoes. So they sailed north on the canoes and went over to the Isthmus of Panama, which is the place where the canal would be, but there wasn't one. So they had to make a 600-mile trek across the Isthmus of Panama.
I like it.
Through the jungle.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it was the rainy season, and it was a horrible, horrible trip.
A terrible, awful
scurvy to malaria. Yeah.
At one point on the 5th of May, they were resting at an Indian camp, an Indian farm plantation, a big Indian farm. Native American, we should say. Native Central American? Is that what they're called? Indigenous peoples? Plantation, yes.
There you go.
Lionel Wafer, he wrote this. This is what he wrote. I will quote from Lionel Wafer. I was sitting on the ground near one of our men who was drying gunpowder in a silver plate, but not managing it as he should.
Oh, no.
It blew up. and scorched me knee to that degree that the bone was left bare.
Oh, no.
The flesh being torn away and my thigh burnt for a great way above it. I applied to it immediately such remedies as I had in my knapsack, and being unwilling to be left behind my companions, I made hard to shift on.
Wow. So he just, yeah, he got blown up.
He got blown up. He wasn't able to carry everything, so he gave all his medicines and belongings to a slave, who later disappeared into the jungle with those items.
Oh, no.
I don't think he ran away. I think it's just that it was the rainy season in the jungle and it was horrible. I think he fell down a cliff or a jaguar or something got him. Who knows? So he couldn't go on any further with the company. He stayed with the Kuna Indians there, the Darien Indians.
Okay.
And under the care of the Indians, he got better. They applied some herbs, which they chewed up in their mouths, to his knee and put plantain leaves on there. And he said, that, quote, "This proved so effectual that in about 20 days of this poultice, which they applied fresh every day, I was perfectly cured."
Wow.
"Except only a weakness in that knee, which remained long after."
That's what you get for being a dummy. That's your reminder pain.
So, yeah, well, it wasn't him being a dummy. It was that guy who was trying to dry gunpowder over fire.
Oh, he was watching a guy do it. Okay.
He was just next to a guy who was doing it.
I misheard it. I thought he was the one drying gunpowder for doctor business.
You know, gun safety is everyone's responsibility.
Yes, it is. No, it was another crew member.
but, yeah, blew it up his hand and his thigh.
But the natives cured him.
Awesome.
He stayed with them and kind of went native for a little while. He kind of earned his keep because of one of the Indian chief's wives was having fevers and she was ill.
Mm-hmm.
And even those natives, they did the bleeding thing too. But the way they did their bleeding is they would put the person on a stone in the river.
Oh, no.
And then shoot them with tiny little arrows.
Oh, no.
With a tiny little bow. And they died a lot of the times because they're shooting them with arrows. And he was basically like, there's a better way to do this. He still had his bag of tools on him because that wasn't in the knapsack. Because the good doctor always keeps his tools with him.
I was just about to say the same thing.
So he had one of his lancets, which they used to bleed people.
Okay.
So he's like, hey, I can show you a better way to do this. And the chief was like, I'll let you try your Western ways, but if she dies, you do too.
That's awesome.
And he was like, all right, what do I got to lose, I guess? And he did it, and she got better. And then they were like, oh, wow, this guy knows how to do this. Then he became like they basically took him around to other plantations.
Okay.
And like he was doctoring all these natives and he was learning their ways of healing, like the thing that healed his exploded knee and everything.
I was going to ask. Yeah,
and his Western ways.
Okay.
By the time he was with them for an undetermined amount of time. But eventually Englishmen showed back up to trade with this plantation, and they're like, oh, there's this guy here. And by that time, they didn't even recognize him because he was all dressed in native clothes.
No, he was covered in a goatskin. You said it up front.
Well, that was Robin's prison.
Kevin's got a theme in his doctor, doesn't he? He wants him a little native.
Yeah, well,
rough and ready.
He had all the native clothes, and then he rejoined them and went back out a pirate in again.
Okay.
So think about this. You got a guy who not only knows Western medicine, but he knows this native medicine as well.
Yeah, that's
so he could go back out a piratin.
Yeah. Go back out a piratin.
That's the proper phrase for that line of work.
Yeah.
We were talking about multiclassing. I was talking about multiclassing. That's exactly what you want. He's got two worlds of medicine.
Exactly. And if you get shipwrecked or something, and it's like, ooh, I can chew up this herb and slap it on your arm and wrap a banana leaf around it, and it'll heal.
They still do that in sci-fi movies to this day. Like, they'll be sitting in the computer-controlled laser that heals all things, but they're still, like, the mystical doctor that's like, we need some ointment. Mm-hmm. Hold on. And a little pestle and mortar, and that's the extra juice that makes it go.
Mm-hmm. He eventually ended up in Jamestown, Virginia, and he was promptly arrested for piracy.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. They sent him back home to England in 1690. Where he took a king's pardon, probably because, you know, I'm a doctor and I'm a learned man. And then this is the baller move. All his belongings and everything were seized when he was arrested, but he sued for his belongings and won and got everything back save for 300 pounds, which was given to the College of William and Mary in Virginia, kind of as like this, his penalty was 300 pounds.
Okay.
Or maybe they just didn't send it back to him and just wrote a note, 300 pounds, thank you for your 300 pound donation to the College of William and Mary.
There you go.
And his whole takeaway from pirating was 1,158 pieces of eight, 162 pounds of plate silver.
Yep. Don't put it near a fire with gunpowder.
I know, right? 1.5 ounces of gold and various bolts of silk and cloth.
Yeah, those are exotic fabrics.
Yes.
Can we get a conversion
to today's dollars, what that would be?
I'm not sure, but I think it's quite a lot. 162 pounds of silver is a lot of silver.
Right.
Yeah, an ounce of silver. An ounce and a half of gold.
I didn't see why very much.
And 1,158 pieces of eight, which pieces of eight, I believe, are gold, right?
Or doubloon style. Like,
yeah, something.
Coin currency.
Yeah. Quite a bit. He went on to write a book in 1699 called A New Voyage and Descriptions of the Isthmus of America.
That's the book I'll have to look to see if he got voluntold or volunteered.
Which talked about all his adventures. It was published in Dutch, French, German, Swedish, Spanish, and English. He's believed to have passed away in 1705.
That's a great pick. He's been through it all. Like, he's been over land, he's been over sea, he's been blowed up, he's been left behind at the ship to have nobody come back. Mm-hmm. And he stood up to it all.
Survived going through the jungles.
With his busted hand.
Yeah.
Like, patched himself up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hardcore doctor, like, level up skill. Like, in the movie or the story, when you're the doctor that, as a last resort, have to operate on yourself and then still do it.
I mean, his knee got blown up to the bone. He could see the bone.
And he lost all his stuff because his friend fell down the cliffside.
Yeah. Or was eaten by a jaguar or something.
By the way, just for point of clarification, a piece of eight is worth one real.
Oh, okay.
Real?
Real, perhaps.
Okay.
Okay. Whatever that is.
So it is just a unit of currency, though.
I don't know. There's a reference to 25 cents, but I don't know. It didn't make any sense to me.
Oh, pieces of eight, sometimes like a quarter of a dollar. Confusing. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Oh, I see.
So it's like eight pieces makes...
I know that pieces of eight were a bigger thing, and you could break them up into eight pieces.
So yeah, it really is the quarter to the dollar.
So they could make change.
Yeah. They would literally take the thing and break it and give it you half or a quarter or whatever.
I like it. And I just have to say this because I have this meme saved in my notes, but when pirate Jean Lafitte saw the governor advertising a $500 reward for his capture, pirate Lafitte offered $1,500 for the capture of the governor. Such a piratey move.
Baller.
$500, $1,500, have at it.
Heck yeah. You know what? I'm going to do that if they ever put a bond on me.
See? I'll see your bond, like, and I'll raise you.
I'll raise it for the sheriff.
Tell him I'm coming and hell's coming with me.
I think we got some good naval surgeons on our
ships.
Good
doctrine.
Yeah, some doctrine and some noble doctors, because that was key. Like, we are talking about pirates, and we are going to have some crazy people in here. So the doctor really should be the
right,
the educated, clean, fixing
voice of reason.
Which is, I shied away from the Lothario, and I shied away from the guy who was just like, just get it out. I don't care how. I'm just going to give you stuff to get it out.
Yar!
Now you know who we want as pirate surgeons on our ship.
Oh, those are great picks.
We want to know what your pick is for a pirate surgeon.
Yeah, we want to know who you're going to pick for your doctors, because I did find a bunch of my research, but I'm sure there's a ton we missed.
Yeah. You can let us know on all our social medias, at Assuming Pod. That's just go to social media, put at Assuming Pod. There's a whole bunch of them there. You can also send us a Gmail. We like to get mail from you guys, assumingpositions@gmail.com. Every week I say, yo, Mikey. Hey, Mikey. Arr, Mikey.
Yar, me matey.
How would you like them to format that Gmail they're sending you?
We've already burned the speak like a pirate one.
So many pirate ones.
But we've had some fun bits in this one. type to me like you're a doctor giving me really bad medical advice.
Oh, okay.
Send it on a prescription pad.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Pretend to be a doctor like you would in the 1700s. Be like, I guess this will work.
I would also like to add, boys, I think we've got enough to do an actual email episode coming up soon.
Ooh,
so,
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, we're still getting those together, so get them in fast, and maybe your email will be read.
Thank you again for the
podcast near you.
Thank you again for all the fans that are sending them in.
Yeah. We love our positrons. If you like what we do here and want to support us, podcasting is not free. You can throw some money in a tip jar. BuyMeACoffee.com/assumingpod. You are the best positrons that ever were. We want to thank you guys so much for listening. We also want to thank that guy Brad for doing our announcing, Not Scott for being here and providing equipment, Jazzar for our music, and we hope you guys have a great rest of your week on the high seas.
And, yar!
And don't, like, just don't shoot yourself up with mercury. It's not a cure for anything.
Eat your lemons and your limes.
Yeah, Kevin, yeah, that's the thing.
Kevin,
yeah.
Are you a doctor? Are you really able to give that advice?
I am not a doctor. Okay, I will not give that. But you know what advice I will give?
Eat a lime,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure we're at least on par with some of the 17th century
doctors. I think you might be right.
But eat a lime. Bye.
Bye.